some years ago, the church that I was minister of closed, and it was my first church straight out of Bible college. Around the same time, the Royal Air Force turned down my application to join them as a chaplain. And shortly after that, we had a particularly poor experience in the Baptist settlement system when a church got very upset when my wife Nikki made it clear that she wasn't going to fulfill their expectations of what a minister's wife should be. They weren't going to be cucumber sandwiches and Victoria sponges. I was confused. I was hurt. I was angry. Dazed, I think, would be the right word. Just what was God doing? What was I doing? What had 3 years at Bible college and the 3 years on probation as a newly accredited minister all been for? I felt that I needed to press pause on everything. But at the same time, I had a wife and children that I needed to provide for. I had been a communications systems technician in the Royal Corps of Signals, and not far from where we lived was a defence electronics company called Thales, who were recruiting. And when I went for the job interview, I was back on familiar ground. A top secret workshop with multiplexers, spectrum analysers, acoustic sensing devices, and so on. And on the day that I started my new job at Thales, I posted on my Facebook page, Ken Adolfi started work at Thales. And underneath that, I wrote, going fishing. Going fishing. And I thought it would be quite obvious what I was referencing. But no one seems to get it, not even my Christian friends. Going fishing was a direct reference to this passage here and to Simon Peter's experience and his words in John 21, verse 3, which in most translations reads, I'm going fishing. We find Peter and seven of the other disciples a week or two perhaps after the events of the crucifixion and resurrection, feeling, I imagine, much as I did, confused, hurt, dazed. What had the past 3 years with Jesus all meant? What was it all about? Where was God and what was he doing? When Peter said, I'm going fishing, he didn't mean I'm going to grab my rod and a handful of worms and head down to the lake just to clear my head for an hour or so. What he meant was, I'm going back to what I know. Back to what I'm familiar with, what feels safe to me, and where I know I can earn a living and provide for my family. I'm going back to my trade as a fisherman. And we get here one of the first glimpses of Peter's leadership as the others all decide to follow him. We know from Luke's gospel that Peter, his brother Andrew, James and John, the sons of Zebedee, and quite probably Philip and Nathanael were fishermen before Jesus called them. So it's no surprise when they all say to Peter, we'll join you. I suspect that they had been fishing on and off during their ministry with Jesus in order to support themselves and their families. As it seems, their boats and their nets are there ready to go, and they just hop in and off they go out to the lake. But things don't go as well as they expected. They are out all night and they catch nothing. When I went to work for Thales, although I was in familiar territory and I knew what I was doing, I got frustrated and bored pretty quickly. It wasn't what the past 6 years of training had been readying me for. I needed that experience to realize that this wasn't what I was called for, wasn't what I was gifted for, and wasn't what I was trained for. And this was part of my life which was behind me. And in the same way, I think, Peter and the others needed this experience to realize the same thing. This isn't what the past 3 years of training, learning, and walking with Jesus were all about. No longer were they fishermen, they were fishers of men. And I wonder how many Christians are in that place today. They feel relatively safe and secure. They have a reasonable income, a familiar job and a familiar environment. They know what they are doing, but they're not fulfilling the purposes which God has in mind for them. I came that they should have life and have it to the full. And so our disciples have had a frustrating night at work. This safe, familiar job to which they've returned had yielded nothing. They've been out all night and they've caught no fish. Just as day is dawning and they're heading back to shore, something strangely familiar happens. A man tells them to throw out their nets and they'll find some fish. And they do as they're told, and they catch so many that they can't haul their nets back into the boat. And I imagine that John's mind is working overtime. I'm sure something like this has happened before. And he has a light bulb moment as things click into place. And he realizes that it's Jesus standing on the shore. And he says to Simon Peter, "It is the Lord." Peter, the one who ran headlong into the empty tomb, is so excited that he can't wait for the nets to be hauled in, and he leaps into the sea and he swims to shore. The fish and fishing, which were his livelihood and what he knew, are now meaningless to him. And he leaves them behind to get to Jesus as fast as he can. This scenario isn't an exact replication of the first miraculous haul of fish that we heard from Luke, when Jesus first called these fishermen to be his disciples. However, there's enough parallels that indicate that it's what the army would call a re-show parade. A re-show parade. A kind of second attempt to get things right. In both accounts, the men have been out all night and they've caught nothing. In both accounts, it's Jesus who tells them to try again. In both accounts, there's a miraculous haul of fish. And in both accounts, Jesus calls them away from what they knew, the safety and security and familiarity of their ancestral jobs, to follow him. In Luke's account, which occurs right at the beginning of Jesus' ministry, when he calls the first disciples, we're told that they pulled their boats up on shore, left everything, and followed him. Here in John's Gospel, where Jesus recommissions the disciples after his resurrection, Peter's act of abandoning the boat and the fish and heading to Jesus is a restatement of that event in Luke, where the disciples abandoned their boats and their fish and followed Jesus. Sometimes in our lives, when things aren't going great, when we're wondering where God is and what he's doing and what it's all about, we're tempted to return to what we knew before. where we think we're going to feel safe, secure, and content. The reality is, we're probably not going to catch any fish. I think that this second miraculous catch of fish recorded in John's Gospel does three things for the disciples. Probably does more than three, but three things being in a good Baptist sermon. Firstly, it reminds them of that first miraculous catch recorded in Luke. It reminds them of the excitement and enthusiasm they felt when Jesus called them. It reminds them that they were willing to haul their boats ashore, leave their nets, leave the security and certainty and mundanity of their lives and follow Jesus, despite not knowing where he was going to take them and what he was planning to do with them. Secondly, it's a re-show of that first miraculous catch. It's an opportunity for them to get it right this time. All of them failed Jesus at the point of his arrest and crucifixion. And here, in a very similar manner to their first calling, he gives them the chance to put things right and try again. Thirdly, Jesus is recommissioning them. As we've looked at Jesus' post-resurrection appearances, one of the things I've pointed out is just how gentle is Jesus with people who have failed him. We thought of Cleopas, who on the very day of the resurrection decided he'd had enough. It was too much. And rather than stay in Jerusalem, he headed home to Emmaus. And when Jesus came up to him on the road, although he did express his frustration at Cleopas's lack of understanding, he didn't tell him off or shout at him or tell him he was useless or reject him as a follower. Rather, he patiently explained it all to Cleopas and revealed himself as he broke the bread. Likewise, when we thought of Thomas, who wouldn't believe the testimony of the other disciples, Jesus could have been angry and upset with Thomas, but instead he gently encourages Thomas to see and to believe for himself. We continually let Jesus down. No matter how good we are, no matter how faithful and committed we are, we let him down. Ecclesiastes says, "There is no one on earth who is righteous, no one who does what is right and never sins." And the Apostle Paul wrote in Romans, "For all have sinned and fall short of the glory of God." The good news is that Jesus reminds us. He offers us a re-show and he recommissions us. Not just once or just twice, but as many times as we need it. The Lord is gracious and compassionate, slow to anger and rich in love. Simon Peter, if he hadn't already realized it, is again shown the grace and compassion of God. Whilst I obviously believe that Simon Peter was a real person and that these are real interactions that he had, in some ways he also represents the ordinary, everyday Christian believer. His excitement, his enthusiasm, his courage, yet his lack of faith, his cowardice, his failure to understand are all things that we can identify with. John 21:15-19 records Jesus' recommissioning of Peter. Three times Jesus challenges Peter, "Do you love me?" And three times Peter responds, "Yes, Lord, you know that I love you." John records that Peter felt hurt because Jesus asked three times, "Do you love me?" Obviously, this threefold confession of his love mirrors Peter's earlier threefold denial of Jesus. Whilst Jesus, through his Holy Spirit, does deal with us gently but firmly, it can be challenging and difficult for us as we go through these processes with him. Some people do like to make something of the fact that in the original Koine Greek that the New Testament was written in, the word Jesus uses for love in his challenges is different to the word Peter uses in his responses. Jesus uses the word agape, which is said to mean a sacrificial, commitment-based, a head sort of love. It's a love that you decide to love. Peter responds with the word philia, which is more of a feelings-based love, a brotherly love, a sort of heart love. However, by the time the Bible was written, certainly by the time John was written, these words had come to be used interchangeably. There wasn't really a distinction in their usage at this point. So perhaps there is something there, difference between agape and philia, or perhaps there isn't. We'll have that as a question on Wednesday night. Note that this isn't the only time that Peter lets Jesus down and needs a telling off. In Acts, Peter hasn't realised that Jesus' death made all things clean, and he needs a vision from God before he'll go and preach to Gentiles. And in Galatians, Paul recalls how in Antioch, he had to rebuke Peter for not eating with Gentiles. It's this remind, reshow, recommission cycle. This passage from John 21 is a really important part of Christian history and a really important part in the life and ministry of the disciples. They are so confused, so dazed, so unsure that they've seemingly abandoned their life of faith, the journey that they were on with Christ, and returned to their former profession of fishing. Jesus appears. He reminds them of his original call to them those 3 years before. He invites them to a reshow, try again, and he recommissions them. And so without this event, what would the next stage of Christianity have looked like? Would we have had Peter and the others preaching in Jerusalem? Would we have had their response on the day of Pentecost? Would the faith of the disciples just have fizzled out, and therefore early Christianity with it? It is a really, really important story in our history, the history of Christianity. But it's also really important for us in our own lives. It speaks to us of our own failures, our own lack of faith, our own desires to return to what we once knew, rather than the risky, uncertain business of following Christ. And it shows us that no matter what, Christ, in his compassion and his grace, reminds us of that initial excitement and enthusiasm when we first came to faith. He offers us a reshow, a chance to try again. and again and again and again. And he recommissions us, gives us his commission, gives us his orders, if you like, to be his disciples here and now, today.